On the line from Columbus, Ohio tonight, Tony Monaco. Hi, Tony.
Jim Clark, how are you?
How you doing? I'm doing great. How you doing down there in Columbus?
I'm doing really good, man. Thank you for having this interview with me.
Yeah. Tony, you're so good. You're bad, man. You're really bad. You are one bad cat. And I'm so pleased to be able to have contact with you again after all these many years. I introduced you at Jazz Fest in Sioux Falls back in July of 2002, and man, you put on a great show that afternoon, I'm telling you.
Oh, thank you.
It was a warm day, wasn't it? It was a warm day, if you remember it.
Yeah, I think the sun was setting. It was like in the middle of the afternoon, and the sun was in its peak, and it was just hitting us, and there was no cover. I remember it was just really hot.
Yeah, it was. Are you still playing the organ from time to time with your feet?
Oh, absolutely, man.
I'll never forget that. That just blew me away, but it was great. It was great. Are you still playing?
Well, it was such a nice festival. I really enjoyed that. I never forget that, and I never can ever say thanks enough for introducing me to the folks there, and, you know, looking forward someday to come back, too, you know.
We would love to have you back. We really would. And I'm gonna be fighting for you on the line, on the front line regarding that. Are you still playing with Robert Crowd and Louis Samos?
You know, time and has its way of doing things, and I've traveled so many times around the world that I've played with so many different bandmates that I don't. The band that I play with now that I would call my band is actually Fareed Hawk out of Chicago. And Greg Fundus on drums out of Chicago. They're kind of my new trio.
Yeah, you've played with a lot of great players along the way. I want to talk about that a little later. You're heading to Michigan in a few days, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm blessed. I've been doing a lot of teaching and a lot of playing, and I'm going to Michigan actually to do both at Hope College. I'm going to do clinics with the youngsters and then some concerts with the faculty, which will be very cool.
We were talking on the phone before we got on the air here. Hope College is in Holland, Michigan, which is on the far west side of the state. It's right next to Lake Michigan. It's just maybe 30 miles from Grand Rapids to the west. And they have the big Tulip Festival there every year. That's a Dutch community. And it's actually a tourist destination in the Midwest. So you'll be encountering all kinds of tulips when you get there.
I'm really looking forward to going. You know, I like to travel. I've traveled quite a few places, but that's one place I have not been yet. So I'm really looking forward to visiting the wonderful people there.
Now, you're a Columbus, Ohio boy. Once you get to Michigan, that's University of Michigan territory up there. That is a rivalry. Are you really into OSU sports?
No, I was when I was a younger young man, and Woody Hayes was the coach. But since I found music, I love football, but I always say let the best team win.
Yeah, Woody is still a god in Columbus to this day, indeed. I want to talk to you a little bit about what was it like to grow up in Columbus, Ohio in the late 60s and 70s. What were you listening? I always ask this to all of the people I interview. What were you listening to when you were a boy and a teenager?
Well, you know, my first influences to modern music would have been the Beatles. You know, I had a record player in my bedroom that I had in the local record stores as I could find Beatles 45s, you know, like I Want to Hold Your Hand and those kind of tunes. And as a matter of fact, I mean, that was the airwaves, Ed Sullivan Show and all that stuff. I really didn't get turned on to jazz until I was given a Jimmy Smith record when I was 12. And then I went straight from listening to the Beatles to listening to Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, pretty much my story, too. It was the Beatles in the 60s for me. It took me longer to get into jazz. But I want to talk to you about your early musical experiences. You played an accordion starting at age 8, and then you went to organ at age 12. Tell us about that.
Well, my father played in a little wedding band, and they had a quartet with sax, bass, accordion, and he played the drums. And in order to make more money, the accordion player bought a Farfisa organ, and they fired the bass player so that they could, the organ player could play the bass and the keys. And so he had gone to the local record store and bought up a bunch of organ stuff. And he stumbled across Jimmy Smith, and he wasn't into it. So he handed me this the best of Jimmy Smith 2-album set, and point blank told me, says, "I'm not into this, but give it a listen." And I'll never forget going up into my bedroom where I was listening to those Beatles 45s, and I had to take the little adapter off and switch the speed. And the whole side of one album was the sermon. And it was 20 some minutes. And I put the needle on, and I was 12 years old. And by the time, you know, the first note was played, I was just like addicted to it. And by the time the end of the track played, the 20 minutes or so, I knew that I was going to do this. There was no question.
It was an epiphany.
It was an epiphany. It was it. It was it. I was it.
Yeah. You know? A lot of musicians have that. One record influences everything that's to come. Yeah.
Amazing, you know. Of course, you know, I was also influenced by the, you know, the early Motown and funk days. And, of course, I love Barry White, and I love all the groove stuff. And, you know, I try to teach all my students today that, you know, bebop is not the only way. You've got to learn all kinds of music if you want to be a rounded musician. And, you know, because jazz is really today covers everything, you know.
Yeah, it does. It's a big tent. It's a big tent.
Now, absolutely.
Now, you met Jimmy Smith at one point. Tell us about that. What year was that?
My first encounter with Jimmy Smith was, it was coincidental that it was my 16th birthday. But I had found a record that Jimmy Smith recorded with his own little label called Mojo Records. And there was an address on the back of the album. And I started sending cassette tapes of me playing the accordion, trying to play Jimmy Smith. And so he called me back after writing all these little letters and sending these cassette tapes. And my father woke me up because it was late at night because he had the Jimmy Smith Supper Club in Los Angeles. And so, you know, it was probably maybe 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning in Columbus. And my father woke me up and said, "You got to come to the phone." And when I got to the phone, there was this raspy voice, and I knew that voice because I heard every grunt, and you know, from every record that I listened to, I knew Jimmy's sound, his voice, I knew everything. And he said, "Tony Marco," and before he said Jimmy Smith, my heart stopped, and he said, "Jimmy Smith," and I was freaking out. I mean, you know, I thought he was a god. You know, when you're 16 years old and you've listened to all these records, you know, he's gigantic. And he gave me two pieces of advice. He told me that, number one, I played too many notes, and I think that, you know, every musician could take heed to that every time we play, that we don't overplay. And the second piece of advice he told me was that I needed to learn how to play the right chords. And I've been seeking for 45 years to play the right chords, and I think I understand what he was saying. He was telling me that I need to find the right tonal centers so that I can make my proper substitutions and grow in harmony, because you can play a bunch of notes, but if you don't grow in harmony, the notes are always the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of that kind of thing. I'm in school still every day with that same lesson of not trying to play too many notes, but try to play the quality ones and try to grow in harmony so that my sound sounds, you know, evolving rather than just the same old, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you think made Jimmy Smith distinctive from all the other greats, like Don Patterson and all the Shirley Scott and all the others that followed? There are so many of them. What made Jimmy Smith so distinctive, do you think?
Well, the honest truth is that, you know, Jimmy Smith invented the new way of playing. So everybody who followed, like, you know, Don and Larry and Groove and Jimmy McGriff and everyone, including myself, we're basically just taking off where he left off, with playing the organ in a new way by using the left hand to play bass and the right hand to harmonize and play, you know, the melodies and the notes. So everybody who came after him is basically copying the style that he started. That's what separates Jimmy really from the rest of them. Because, you know, everyone that you mentioned are great in their own right. But, You know, Jimmy had a fire to him. He had a personality in his music that no one else has.
Now, Hank Marr and Don Patterson are from Columbus, right?
That's why it was a blessing. You know, I could go to the then called Chitlins clubs, and I could actually get firsthand right up close to the real organ players. And that's where I really learned how to play the organ, was watching them right up there when you're in where it's happening. You know, it's sort of like a baptism.
Yeah, they're all greats. They're all greats. Jimmy McGriff, and Shirley Scott, and Don Patterson, and all the others. When did you meet Joey DeFrancesco?
Well, it's cool. That was another coincidence. It's funny how in our careers, when we look back, how different messages and coincidences come that are part of the career. My father had just died from lung cancer, and this was about maybe 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And they were opening up a new jazz club in Columbus. And the guy that was like the, I guess you would call it the promoter, called me and says, "Hey, I'm bringing in Joey DeFrancesco to open up this new jazz club called the 501. And, you know, I was running a construction business at the time and just playing on the weekends because, you know, most musicians have to moonlight and work during the day, you know. And so I don't know what made me think about it, but I said, "Hey, I'd like to take Joey out to dinner." And so when Joey came in town, the promoter called me, and I went to pick up Joey, and I really wasn't interested in telling him much about my organ career. I just wanted to be cool and take this great organist out to dinner. And I had to go pick him up where he was given a clinic, and that was the twist of fate, because you know, when I went in there, some people in the audience told Joey that I played the organ, and then he should hear me play. And so I was really nervous, you know. I sat down on the organ, and Byron was playing the drums, and the next thing I know, I started playing, and Joey loved it. You know, he said, "Hey, I really dig your playing." And that's when we became friends, and he wanted to produce my first record, Burning Grooves.
He's probably the most famous jazz organist on the scene today. What makes him different from all of the others playing, like Jimmy Smith? What makes him different, do you think?
Joey's a genius. Joey's a phenomenal musician, and he's a really great person. But to speak about the music itself, you know, Joey picked this up when he was very, very young. His father was an organ player from Philadelphia, and he got all of the right direction right at the very beginning.
Papa John.
Papa John. And Joey has, like, an incredible ear. He can play back anything he hears. So, you know, he's a genius. That's all I can say. He's just a phenom. He's incredible.
And
I love listening to him.
And he met Jimmy Smith at a very young age. There's this famous photograph of Joey and Jimmy sitting at the keyboard. And Joey couldn't have been more than 8 years old at the time. It's just incredible. I want to talk about when you were a teenager. You had a serious health issue. It was a neurological disorder of some kind. How did you overcome that, and are there any lasting effects of that?
Well, I have never overcome it. I just learned to live with it and adjust every time I get an episode, as they call it. It's some kind of strange illness that they call neuralgic amyotrophy, and basically what it does is it's sort of like the body turns on itself and nerves start to die. And when the nerves die, the muscles don't work. So I've had two triple fusions in my ankles where I've lost muscles and the bones crushed in my legs and I couldn't walk. I've had my shoulders lost a lot of muscles. I actually lost one of the nerves that went to my left vocal cord, and I speak because they were able to put fat from my stomach into my vocal cord so that I could speak. So it's just one of these illnesses that attacks me, and I get episodes over and over again, and it just takes more and more muscles. So I think music is a gift from God, and I think the voice finds a way to come out. So I've been, you know, I don't give up. I just keep on going. I keep on learning again. Whatever it takes, it doesn't really matter. And I don't even think about that as part of my, something that's a handicap. I think of it as a blessing that allows me to stay humble as a human being so that I can carry the message from my heart and not my head, you know.
Celebration, life, love, music. That's what it's all about. I'm sorry to hear that story, because it must have been extremely difficult for you, especially when you were younger.
Yeah, I couldn't lift my arms. I couldn't lift my shoulders. And that's when I finally went from the accordion over to the organ. So I couldn't lift. I couldn't hold the accordion on my shoulders anymore. The straps would dig into where there was no muscles, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, really, really bad situation. Now, you run Chicken Coop Records, which is a subsidiary of Summit Records, which is a very good jazz label. And you have recorded for Summit with a number of releases.
Yes.
I would have to think Chicken Coop Records, an incubator, a chicken coop for young jazz organists. How did your involvement with Chicken Coop begin?
Well, you know, I was raised in an Italian family, and business was taught to me at a very young age. And I became very, very good friends with Summit Records, Darby Christensen and Kip Sullivan, the owners of Summit. And my dream was to have a label where I could help other people, you know, get recognized, because it took me a long, long time to get my first record deal. And I wanted to make it possible for others who had this enthusiasm to play organ to get a chance. And so I talked to Darby and finally convinced him to help me open up this division. So basically Kip and Darby and myself are partners in Chicken Coop. And the only investment is the catalog. So, you know, I keep building the catalog. We have 19 releases up to date. I just recently released two records in the last few years from one of my younger students, Kevin Coelho. You probably have received some of his
CDs. And Matthew Kaminsky, I'm playing.
Matthew's just releasing his second one on the label. And so my dream is coming true that other people are getting to, you know, get their music out there and get it to you, for example. And, you know, it's that venue that allows it to happen. So Chicken Coop, once again, was just a dream that came true that I persisted in, and God found a way to help me make it happen, I guess, you know?
There's Matthew Kaminsky, and he's got a new one out, and Kevin Coelho. Are there any other real young cats who are playing jazz organ now that I should know about and we should know about?
Well, there's a few that there's a couple of them that I would really like to have on the label, but they're from distant places, and, you know, it's not easy and it's not very cost prohibitive to put records out today. It does take a little bit of an investment because, you know, there's not enough of a market for you to just have that investment money there. And there's one young man I have in Italy that's 21 years old. His name is Leonardo Carotti, and he's another genius. And someday, we'll hear him here in the United States. If I have my way about it, I'll get him on the label someday. Then I have a nice little young kid. He's about 10 or 11 years old in Japan. His name is Neo. He's another little phenom. Mm-hmm. So if I had my way, I would have those two on the label. And then I have another 16-year-old in Syracuse, and these are all students of mine. And that's why I teach, because I love to try to help people. And these are all little students of mine. William Gorman out of Syracuse, New York, another one deserving of a record deal. So they're out there and they're coming. And as long as I have my hands in it, and there's great players like Joey and others out there doing it, we're going to keep continuing the tradition of jazz organ.
Yeah, and these young kids, really, they're the future. They're the future of the music.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You spent many years in the family business in Columbus, first an Italian restaurant and then a concrete business.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that? What lessons that you maybe applied to your music career?
Everything. I you know, the music, what the music business is the same as any sales seminar will teach you, the 80-20 rule. It's 80% business and 20% playing, even though for the player it's 100% playing, or let's say 80% playing and 20% business. It has to be approached from a business aspect. You have to think about developing a market. You have to think about marketing it and building that market. And you also have to continue to grow in product width, just like any other business, which means maybe growing in the way you play and your styles, in the people that you play with. And it's the music business, you know, and I found ways to continue to survive in the music business by teaching, producing educational portals and videos, and playing. So they all kind of go hand in hand so that I could continue to do what I love the best. And now I've been 100% music now for the last 10 years, and I'm surviving and making money. You know, you've got to make money. There's nothing wrong with making a profit, you know.
You got to eat, and you got to pay the rent. Indeed.
You know, bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. You've worked with some great musicians and some great guitarists, Pat Martino, Russell Malone, and Paul Bolenback. Tell me about those guys.
And Bruce Foreman.
Bruce Foreman,
and,
yeah.
Fareed Hawk, and my gosh, let me tell you about guitar players. Our organ players and guitar players come from a very similar school because we're both rhythm instruments. We comp, we chordal, we play chords, we play melody lines. Every guitar player that I've been blessed to come across that I've mentioned, some of the names of the people that I've played with, have helped me grow as a musician. And I continue to love to play with great guitar players. And, you know, I think it's a symbiotic relationship. I think we help each other, you know.
Pat Martino is a legend. He's a genius on guitar.
Yeah.
I also think highly of Russell Malone and Paul Bolenback, too. All these great guys. All these great guys.
Yes.
You've worked all over the country and overseas. You've been in Australia, Japan, Indonesia, all over Europe. What are some of your favorite places? Any places really stand out in your mind?
Well, actually, the older I get, Columbus, Ohio is becoming my most favorite because it's home. But I got to tell you, I've had some, each place has given me a great experience. It's not the place, it's the people. And, you know, there's wonderful people everywhere. Australia, I really became friends with a few people there that every time I go there, they just open their hearts to me. And I always look forward to going back. Asia, I've been to Indonesia, Japan, Singapore, Thailand, Hong Kong. Every place I have lasting memories. I got to tell you, one of my most favorite cities is Toronto. I don't know what it is about the love that I have from Toronto, but I really love Toronto, and I love Japan. Japan is just one of the most incredible places in the world.
And they've got great jazz fans there.
Great jazz musicians. You know, they're just great people. As a matter of fact, I met my wife when I was playing in Tokyo. And, you know, just a great culture, great people. I love Italy because my parents come from Italy. I've been fortunate to develop different markets in different places. I could tell you many, many cool stories from many of these places.
Yeah. You've had a great life. Want to go back to jazz education briefly in the high schools, colleges, universities. The importance of it, pretty obvious. Maybe if you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, just like I'm getting ready to do in Holland, Michigan, it's the youngsters that go to college that, you know, they sign up for a degree and hoping that they'll do something with music. Most of them, if they're you know, smart, they'll continue on to get their master's and doctors and try to find a teaching job because that's the most stable thing. You'll notice even a lot of the great musicians they get tenured into music programs, you know, like Dave Stryker recently with Indiana University. You know, those are very important staples for us because they provide the income when the gigs don't.
I had Dave on the air about a month ago. He's great.
A wonderful cat. Oh, yeah. And another guitar player I love playing with, by the way.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, the university and college track makes a lot of sense for a lot of musicians, but it's so important to keep this music alive among the young people. Tell us a little bit about your family. You have three grown daughters?
I do. Two of them are married. I have a granddaughter, and my third one, she's got a nice boyfriend.
And they're all living in the Columbus area?
No, one lives in Chicago, and two of them live in Columbus.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about upcoming gigs and recordings. You told me you've got a new CD coming out in the fall.
I've got a new CD that's a Tony Monaco release. I've actually released a bunch of CDs in the last few years with different artists. Like, for instance, Fareed did a record called Trance Hypothesis, Fareed Hawk. and I'm on that record. And then I did an indie with a great guitarist and friend of mine who owns Benedetto Guitars in Savannah, Howard Paul. I did a record that was released with him. I do tracks for a lot of different people around the world where they might have, it could even be funk projects or rock projects. But this new record, that's album that's coming out, I keep saying records and albums, but CD, in September is probably going to be one of my most interesting. It's me, Fareed, and Greg Fundus from Chicago. It's just cutting-edge Hammond stuff. It's got some funk elements to it. It's even got some classic guitar mixed with organ, a little bit of vocals, a lot of originals, but not your standard swing stuff. It's just kind of like more like hip-hop and meets straight ahead, meets smooth. So it's got great elements in all respects. You know, all jazz forms are great, you know.
Well, you got to send it to me, Tony, because I will play it. I will play it. You're also a fine singer. I got Girl Talk queued up here. I'm going to play that right out of this interview. Are you familiar with Giacomo Gates?
Oh, I love Giacomo.
You ought to do a CD with Giacomo. You guys
would
work.
You're not the first person that said that. You're absolutely right. I should try to get a hold of him. It's been a long time.
You guys would really fit well together. Giacomo, of course, is this great bebop jazz vocalese singer.
Yeah.
You got to do something with Giacomo. He's up in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Yeah.
I love Giacomo. I met Giacomo when IHAE was still going on. And Mike Carlson, I think you know Mike, my radio guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was working some of Giacomo's projects, and he said the same thing. So next time you talk to Giacomo, we tell him to give me a call. We gotta hook it up.
Yeah, I got your numbers, and I've got his numbers. So
yeah. I'll play matchmaker here. Yeah.
Well, listen, Tony, we would love to get you back to South Dakota soon. You are an out of sight organist. And I love you. And that day in Sioux Falls at Jazz Fest 12 years ago, it was a great day for me, and I really enjoyed it. And you were out of sight. I wish you the very best. Send me your new release, okay?
You bet. God bless you, Jim. Thank you. I love you, too.
Okay.